the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and now with boost power is my co-host, Kyle JCRB Krause.
Yeah, it's the final lap. Yeah.
Can you guess the topic of today's show?
This game is very, very quotable. It's very quotable. This whole series is quotable.
There's only a handful of lines, but they're all good.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a whole bunch of lines for the endings in F-Zero GX, but I can't remember any of them off the top of my head because it's been forever since I played most of that game. But anyway. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing all right. How about you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. What do we got going on in this episode other than a certain F-Zero series talk?
What do we got going on? If you are listening to this on Monday as the episode is released, mark on your calendars, I'm going to be on the Sonic live stream later this week on Wednesday. Thursday. They do it on Thursdays. I almost messed that up. But head over to the official Sonic YouTube channel. They do like a 1 to 2 hour live stream. I'm going to be on there talking about IDW Sonic. They are scheduled to have Ian Jones Quarterly of OKKO to talk about the OKKO Sonic crossover. So lots of great guest star stuff. They have a fun show. All of this is subject to, schedule changes, of course, but I am pretty much committed to be there. So I'll be on there at least, and you can marvel at all of my hairiness.
Double your Ian's, double your fun.
Exactly.
Getting two Ian's for the price of none, because hopefully nobody's paying for this, right?
No, it is a free live stream.
Where is this supposed to be happening?
On YouTube and it is on Twitch.
Okay. Is it the official Sonic...
Yes, it is the official Sonic channels YouTube whose links Twitch. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay. I just want to make sure it's like we get all the information out there so people know what to at least kind of look for.
So. And I think it runs 2 p.m. Pacific time. I really should research this beforehand.
That's okay. Oh,
you should have subscribed to the official Sonic channel. Anyway, put the little bell thing on to get alerts. Tune in. Have a laugh.
Watch all the videos multiple times over. I don't know if that actually helps anybody, but do it anyway. Actually, you should watch our videos multiple times over.
Yeah.
Set them on like 2x speed and just watch a whole playlist full of all of them. Do it. I dare you.
And my goal for this appearance is to not get food on myself before the segment, so I'm not sitting there awkwardly trying to hide the giant food stain and be incredibly embarrassing the entire show.
Why can't you just bring like an extra shirt or something?
I might just bring three just in case. Wait,
are you actually going to be on site or are you going in remotely? See,
I will be in sunny California.
Okay, I'm trying to get all the details here because I don't know what's going on. Also, why don't I live in California anymore? We could meet up probably.
Yeah, I'm not going to be in town that long. I'm already there for business, and it's kind of like, hey, this worked out. You want me to be out there? And they're like, yeah, sure. So, boom.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got all the details, I think, now.
Yes. Sonic YouTube and Twitch channel. I will be there live talking about IDW Sonic, other guest stars. It's a fun show. It's early afternoon Pacific time. Check it out.
Okay. Cool.
What about you?
In other Bumble headlines, actually, something I came across earlier this week. It was very exciting for me. I'm a big fan of Marvel's Runaways and Cloak and Dagger shows. Runaways is on Hulu and Cloak and Dagger is on Freeform, which is formerly like ABC Family and whatever. It's gone through multiple permutations, especially over the last decade. Seems like they can't decide what to do with that channel. But both of those are really... excellent shows, more drama rather than action, which is still good. I like that. I like that approach. And they are actually going to be crossing over for Runaways season 3, which is
always fun.
Which is very awesome. Runaways and Cloak and Dagger do have a history together in the comics. Cloak and Dagger, of course, date back to like the 80s, and Runaways is an early 2000s kind of thing. So. Cloak and Dagger's been around for a lot longer, but they seem to kind of cross over quite a bit. So I'm definitely looking forward to having these versions of the characters cross over. Runaways, the characters are actually pretty pretty spot on to their incarnations in the comics, pretty close to it anyway. Cloak and Dagger, they make up some different, they make some changes. Mainly Cloak and Dagger takes place in New Orleans, but they're still connected, and I'm glad to see them coming together, because it seemed like Cloak and Dagger was actually, for their season finale, the most recent season, season two, for their season finale, they kind of left New Orleans, and I'm like, huh, well, where else could they go?
Perhaps right? they'll perhaps run they'll, away somewhere.
Perhaps they'll head to LA. Like, I could see that. Yeah, perfect. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know how many people are watching these shows. I'm sure they do not get huge. They do not draw in huge numbers like the movies do, for sure. But the for fans of these shows, I'm very happy. As a fan of these shows, I'm very happy. So I'm looking forward to it. But unfortunately, we have to wait till December for that season to even start. So,
womp womp.
Yeah, I don't know what's.
Well, considering that we're already in August, it probably won't feel like that long.
True, and I can't wait until December, because it means it'll finally not be a billion zillion degrees anymore. It won't be the surface of the sun anymore here. So that sounds great. I'm happy. So, are we ready to move on, Ian, into our main topic?
We are, and joining the proud tradition of talking about video game series that we enjoy. Kyle, I think this is more your bag, because it's one, video games, two, racing, three, fantastic music, and four, I never played a ton of the F-Zero games.
That's
and
okay.
When I did, boy, did I not get very far in them.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, they're brutal. Especially once you start getting into F-Zero X and GX territory.
That was my first experience with F-Zero, so...
Yeah.
No training wheels here.
And I was introduced to F-Zero with the first game, going over to friends' houses who had different games than I did, and they had F-Zero was one of them, and I'm just like, dude, this game is so cool. Of course, we're starting with the original F-Zero for the Super Nintendo. It's pretty much a glorified tech demo for Mode 7, kind of like Pilot Wings. There's not much depth to it. You have one of four racers and cars to choose from with different stats, and you race around on pretty much flat 2D planes that sort of rotate, because that's one of the cool things that the Super Nintendo could do, was sort of skew and rotate background sprites to make it look like you were actually progressing in a forward 3D motion, even though you technically weren't. But yeah, there's not much to it, but the music and everything is so good, and there's just, I don't know, there's so much, just so much that's appealing about it. Just, it's a very colorful game. You have you don't have a whole heck of a lot of story. There's no story in the game itself. It's all in the manual. But this is where Captain Falcon, of course, is introduced. And, of course, we've also got Samurai Goro, Pico, and Dr. Stewart with their respective vehicles. And those are your main playable characters. And then a bunch of no-name randos that are just palette swaps that kind of get in your way. Things were a bit different back then. I think nowadays, I think the game still holds up, but it may not be one that you want to sit there and play for long periods of time. Just because eventually you'll either run out of things to do or get so frustrated that difficulty you don't want to deal with it anymore. And this one does get pretty tough. I've not put it up on the level of X and GX, but it's pretty tough. So
it was also kind of shocking to me, because, like I said, I started with GX. And to go back to the original is like, okay, so you start with four. How many do you unlock after that?
Of cars?
How many cars? There's only four?
There's only four.
Yeah. It started with four? That's it?
That's all you get, yeah.
Well, I mean, at least we can have the kind of charming retro versions of these characters. What do you mean Captain Falcon didn't actually have a body until Smash Brothers? What?
No. He had a body. He just didn't? Yeah, he appears in he appears in artwork and stuff.
Okay. Smash Brothers invented a lot.
Actually,
just to put him in.
Actually, if you look at... F-Zero X, I think, predates Smash Brothers.
Look at me showing my ignorance.
I think. And if you look at the cover art for the original F-Zero, if you look inside the windows of the cars, you can actually see the drivers. And their designs are pretty close to what they'd eventually become. At least, I think you can see Captain Falcon and Samurai Goro, at least. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly if you can see the other two, but... Yeah, they established a lot of that stuff early on. They just didn't really codify any of it in-game until F-Zero-X. So... but before F-Zero-X, we actually had a little bit of a detour for the SNES Satellaview add-on in Japan. We had BS F-Zero-2. Why they tack on BS onto the Satellaview game titles, I don't know. But they all have BS on them.
I've seen the explanation because there was a Zelda game like that, too.
There is, yeah.
Something satellite, broadcast satellite?
I think you're right, broadcast satellite. That would make sense, but... Yeah, a lot of these were like downloadable only games that you just downloaded off of the satellite internet service that Nintendo had at the time. And this was one of those where like they released a new cup of tracks every week. So you had different tracks to race over time. And it took a while for these to actually get dumped as ROMs. There was like only one of them floating around for the longest time. And eventually they found the rest. But these have all new cars and tracks. The tracks are still based on environments from the first game for the most part. So I don't think there's really anything too new in terms of like music and stuff. It's basically just a reskinned expansion of the original F-Zero. So it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool at the time when I first played it. I first played him through emulation because I'm like, F-Zero 2? What the heck? F-Zero 2? We never had any F-Zero 2. So I, you know, I'm a filthy emulator. And I emulated them to play, well, the first one at least. The one that was released at the time. This was decades ago. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty neat to see some new environments with some new cars. But these cars have never appeared in any other F-Zero incarnation, I don't believe. And no clue who the drivers are, so...
Well, clearly this is what they need to mine for the inevitable F-Zero sequel that will be getting before the heat death of the universe, right, Nintendo?
I don't think so. I think this... I don't know. I don't know, Ian. I'm so sad. We gotta get an F-Zero. We gotta get another one. Anyway, F-Zero-X is up next. For the N64, we finally leaped into the third dimension officially. And this game is where things start getting crazy. This game is where the tracks turn into basically into hazardous roller coasters that will screw you over within 1 second if you're not careful. This is one of the first games I can think of that prioritized frame rate also over graphical fidelity, which is kind of cool and a bit strange at the time. The N64 was not necessarily known for its high frame rate. Things got a little chuggy on the N64 for most games, but F-Zero X runs at a smooth 60 frames per second, even with four players, which is kind of amazing. Now, the trade-off is that the cars have less detail than R-Wings in the original Star Fox.
Go, Triangle, go!
And actually, I think maybe there are fewer textures in the game than the SNES version of Star Fox. But that's okay. I'll take it because it's so much freaking fun. But it's also like it's super twitchy, and that's one thing I like about F-Zero versus certain other futuristic type racing games. Like a Red Scarf in the chat mentions Wipeout, and I love Wipeout. Don't get me wrong, Wipeout is awesome. But that's a little bit of F-Zero and a little bit of Mario Kart, because you not only got to deal with super fast cars, super fast. Hovering ships on roller coaster tracks, but you've also got to deal with weapons. And F-Zero is kind of a distillation of just pure racing, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You have very few offensive capabilities. You can, starting with F-Zero-X, you were able to kind of double tap the shoulder buttons to smack cars off the sides if you were good, but it was also a risky maneuver because you might end up flinging yourself off the side of the track by doing that. So there was a bit of a risk versus reward thing going on there of trying to either just take everybody out or just beat them. And usually the easier way, well, quote unquote, easier way was to just get out ahead of them and stay there. Easier said than done, of course.
Yeah. Like, so. I got the virtual console version when it came to the Wii U. I don't remember, but I thought, okay, I couldn't do GX, really, but I can do the older version. That's got to be easier, right? No, it's an older game.
No.
I think I did worse at X than I did GX.
X is
it's brutal.
It is.
Unforgiving.
It is different from GX. There's something about it that's different. The controls are a big one. Like, it just feels different. I'm just trying to think of how I can describe how X feels compared to GX. Like, X feels a little more slidey, slippery, maybe?
Yeah, okay.
It seems like it's harder to keep traction, because you kind of end up, if you don't use the bumpers, if you don't use the triggers, I should say, if you don't use the L and R buttons to turn, you tend to kind of slide. And it's just, there's so much stuff coming at you at all at once. The good thing is that there's not much detail, so when things change, you can kind of tell. Like, when all of a sudden you're driving on dirt or ice, you can tell easily because the color of the ground changes vastly from the regular pavement. GX, I think, makes it a little bit more difficult to tell that at high speeds because it's so much more detailed. Other than that, F-Zero X also introduced a ton of new cars and drivers, and finally actually gave artwork to each of them and sort of solidified the series as being inspired more by, I'd say, Western, maybe more Western comic book superhero style, and also maybe like certain anime like Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that. It's sort of like a mishmash of those two, I feel like.
It's almost the precursor to My Hero Academia.
Sure. In a way.
And now you want to see All Might and Captain Falcon throw punches at each other. You know you do.
Of course. The cool thing about F-Zero X was also there was the expansion kit for the 64DD. Of course, it's 64DD, the failed add-on that never came out in the West. For the failed N64 add-on, I should say. The F-Zero expansion kit adds in a whole bunch of new tracks. It actually adds in some new music, too, including Rainbow Road, an F-Zero X-styled version of Rainbow Road from Mario Kart 64. The original game, the original F-Zero X, had the Rainbow Road track, but it did not have the music. The expansion pack, the expansion kit, adds the music. So,
see, I'm going to have to find a video of that, because that sounds freaking awesome.
It is. It's badass. It's just freaking melting guitars in Mario Kart 64's melting guitars. I'm super into it. I love it. So if you've not heard that, you need to look that up. It's great. It also sort of kind of is the way you can build your own cars with it. It's sort of a precursor to the create a car feature that's in F-Zero GX. It's very similar. You got like different pieces that you put together to build a car. You have like your base chassis, and then you add things onto that. So it's very similar to what we would see in GX. But then the big thing is a track creator. Now, the original game had a random track generator. Once you beat everything on like master difficulty, you finally got access to the X Cup, which is just randomly generated tracks that get insanely stupid and will completely destroy even the AI with like random chicanes that make no sense at the end of super long straightaways that send everybody, literally everybody, flying off because the AI actually isn't all that smart. So yeah, it gets pretty ridiculous, and the way it, you kind of start as you're playing the X Cup in the original game, you can kind of start to see sort of the pieces of track that end up getting strung together, so they get a little samey after a while.
Mm-hmm.
With the expansion kit, you could do pretty much anything you wanted. So it gets really in-depth, and there are some insane creations from people I've seen online who have done these absolutely massive roller coaster tracks that are just ridiculous. And it's glorious.
So, now, could you go whole hog on it and plug in so many track pieces that the game can't process it well enough and things start to crawl?
You know, I think kind of, but it does have a limit. It does have limits before it allows you to go too far. But you can do like certain things that you couldn't do or that weren't there in the base game, like crossovers and stuff that just didn't exist. So yeah, it's super insane just what people would do with it. And then now there's like a standalone PC based track creators where you can just edit the ROM directly. But before that we had the expansion kit and it was glorious. So I'm sad we never got it here. So moving on though, we jumped to handhelds and we jumped back to sort of that 2D-esque Mode 7 style of gameplay with F-Zero Maximum Velocity. I do not have much experience with this game.
Never heard of it.
It was like near launch of the Game Boy Advance, actually. Remember when F-Zero was like a tentpole franchise and they had ones like near launch of systems? It's crazy. They don't do that anymore.
See, I remember F-Zero on the Game Boy Advance, but I thought it was just like a remake of the first one.
There are three of them on the GBA. Well, yeah, there's three of them on the GBA, and the GBA was actually the last console to get one. Maximum Velocity, it's a sort of a far-flung 25 years in the future post F-Zero and F-Zero X. It's got all new cars and drivers. The original drivers are quote unquote retired, whatever that means. Maybe some
not
of them,
canon.
Maybe some of them are dead. Yeah, I don't know how not canon. I don't know how canonical Maximum Velocity is. It's a pretty fun game, but it has new cars and drivers that have never appeared before or since. But it takes place back on flat tracks with a Mode 7 style, so it's it kind of feels like a two steps back approach to F-Zero by putting it on a handheld, but it's still a pretty fun game. And then finally, we get to the big one. This is a big one. F-Zero GX and AX for arcades, if you have not played the arcade version, you're missing out. It's good. It's real good. The arcade version is super fun. It's also brutally difficult, as we've established. This adds more cars and tracks. We have the 30 that were included with X and like 9-10 more, something like that. You can make your own cars. Unfortunately, there's no track maker. This game was also, interestingly enough, the first major collaboration between Nintendo and Sega. This was mainly developed by Sega's Sega Studio Amusement Vision, and has some legendarily cheesy. It has a legendarily cheesy soundtrack, voice acting, and story mode, which is also insanely difficult. I'd say that this game is probably harder than Dark Souls. Like, you think Dark Souls is hard? Please play F-Zero GX. I don't care. Dark Souls is not hard. Dark Souls is just frustrating because you have to keep retrying. F-Zero GX is actually difficult.
The character themes, especially the vocal ones.
I love that each character has their own theme song. I love that. That is one thing.
When you manage to out-cheese the vocal tracks from the Sonic series, you've achieved something beautiful and horrible all in one go.
Ian, Sega, this is Sega we're talking about. Sega is the Sega is the king of doing this stuff. The king of cheesy vocal tracks, cheesy vocal themes for each character. It's between like this and Sonic Adventure that I'm like, I absolutely adore characters having their own theme songs like they do in the Sonic games, in the early 2000s Sonic games and in F-Zero GX. That like I'm like I want if I made anything ever I'd want all of the characters in it to have their own cheesy vocal character themes too. That's just and sort of what I get what gets like going in my head. Roster. Oh yeah,
like that's what really just bogs me. Like not everyone gets a vocal track. A lot of them are just instrumental, but still, the entire roster has unique tracks just for them that you don't really hear outside of what the character profile.
Yeah, I think you'd have to go into the character profile to listen to their tracks.
It's insane.
Yeah, It's so ridiculous, and it adds so much to just the world and the characters that it's like, and they're all unique. They all are like different styles. Some of them are like industrial rock. Most of the soundtrack, I would say, is like a electronic industrial rock style. But the character theme songs are built, like purpose-built for each of the characters. You have like the pop diva with her pop-esque theme song. And then you have stuff like Bio-Rex, which is just a mutant, a mutant T-Rex who has like just a friggin' monstrous metal theme song. It's so ridiculous.
What else would a mutant T-Rex exactly have, Kyle?
Exactly.
A mutant T-Rex that rides rocket cars. And in then, the future,
exactly. And then you have the you have Captain Falcon's like ending theme for the story mode, which is so over the top with the vocals, and it's just so ridiculous, and I absolutely adore it. I love this game. It is brutally difficult. It is so freaking hard that I don't know how much I want to go back to the story mode. I did kind of start streaming it at the beginning of the year, playing through just playing through the Grand Prix mode. I didn't even delve into the story mode, but I was playing the Grand Prix mode for Bumblecast Gaming. And even just that was like, oh man, this is, what have I gotten myself into? What have I done?
Now, back in the day, Aaliyah and her brother were far better at it than I was. They also played it a whole lot more. But I distinctly remember my brother-in-law built his own racer to maximize the flight capability and minimize the weight, so that on a few select tracks, if he hit the boosts in just the right order, he literally flew over the entirety of the racetrack at that point.
Yeah, I think this is also where we kind of got snaking. This is where snaking sort of started to become a thing. And so they would build custom racers specifically for snaking, which I think involved having a grip level of E, so the lowest grip ranking. So, and all sorts of other weird things to kind of maximize your speed and your snake ability. So, yeah, F-Zero.
You're also reminding me.
F-Zero GX was just crazy. Go ahead.
I think it was when the Oculus Rift was first coming out, and somebody patched it into their GameCube emulator to do F-Zero GX.
VR F-Zero GX, yeah.
First person VR. Now, granted, the emulator apparently couldn't do more than one or two stages. It didn't like the game.
Yeah.
But those handful of seconds, just watching it, you know, on plain old YouTube was like, nope.
That would definitely be like, that seems very sickening, but also sounds,
I mean, if they were to bring it back on the Switch and, you know, patch it into the Labo VR, I would worry about the children's, you know, whipping their head around, you know, wrench their neck off or something. Just, oh, God.
I'm ready for F-Zero VR. Let's make it happen, Nintendo, Sega.
And the really cool thing about GX and AX, and this I just know is trivia because I never got to play the arcade, but if you took your memory card from your GameCube and plugged it into the arcade booth, you would automatically unlock four characters and I believe racetracks that were exclusive to the arcade version, and then bring it home to play for realsies at home. And otherwise, I don't think you could unlock it.
No, you could. Because that's how I did it.
There you go.
I forget what it all involves, but it is insanely difficult. This was back in the days when I just had like all the time in the world and all of the desire to do it, to play it. But these days, I don't know if I have the desire so much anymore to try and unlock all the AX cars and drivers. But you can do it without going to the arcade. It's possible. It's just insanely difficult. I think you have to beat the story mode on whatever the higher difficulty is, and then you have to beat multiple cups on master difficulty in Grand Prix mode, and it's just absolutely in freaking sane. Absolutely ridiculous.
It'd be easier to drive to a state with the arcade and plug it in.
At the time, I actually had the arcade game and local to me and didn't even realize it until after I'd already done it. I was like, well, great. Thanks. At least I can play the arcade game. So I played the arcade game. It really is just the AX Cars and Drivers, though. And I think some of the base game drivers, but not all of them in AX. So, but at this point now you can actually play F-Zero AX on a GameCube, because I think they've managed to figure out that AX is on the F-Zero GX disc in full.
Oh, wow.
So, which makes sense. So there are ways to actually unlock it. I think you need certain action replay codes or whatever. Or, you know, just emulate it. Since the Wii and GameCube are actually emulatable now, which is kind of weird to me. But
so now that we've reached the highest of highs in the franchise.
Yeah, I think at this point things kind of, I would say plateau. I wouldn't say they go down, but they kind of plateau. We start getting into two more Game Boy Advance games that are actually tied into the F-Zero, the short-lived F-Zero anime that did get localized for the U.S. And that's where we got that amazing video of Captain Falcon punching, I don't know, what does he punch? He Falcon punches something, like the sun or something. Does he do that? Is that the sun? I don't know what happened. I don't remember exactly what happens in that clip.
The only one I'm thinking of is I think he trades blows with Black Shadow, is it?
Yeah.
And it shows the world exploding from the impact or something. It's been a long
time. That too, yeah. But I thought there was something else where he like actually punched like a planet or punched the sun or something insane like that. It's hilarious. And so that's where, I think that's the point where Captain Falcon really becomes a meme. But it's kind of a, it's somewhat of a reboot of the series. It adds in a lot more story. The story is mostly based on the anime. This is F-Zero GP Legend, by the way, for the Game Boy Advance. I don't think I said that. But it's more along the lines of what we got in Maximum Velocity in the original game. So it's a Mode 7 style rotating background, not really 3D, but kind of gameplay style. And it adds in the boost mechanics and the shoulder attacks, the side shoulder attacks from X and GX. So there's a little bit of influence from the later games there, but they do mostly play, mostly plays like the original game. I like the soundtracks in GP Legend and the subsequent game Climax. They actually do some clever rearrangements of tracks from both X and the original that are a lot of fun. So it's kind of nice where you get to certain areas and you start hearing familiar music. I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. I like that. And then there's some original songs in there as well that are also a lot of fun, but that's really about it. After F-Zero GP Legend, we had F-Zero Climax, which is just a follow-up to GP Legend. It was only exclusive to Japan. It never came out in the West for some reason. There were plans to, but they never seemed to materialize. And then, yeah, that's really about it. I guess it was just more of an expansion pack to GP Legend rather than its own thing. Reuses a lot of assets. It looks very similar. But it does feature a track editor. So that's kind of cool. You could actually make your own 2D-style F-Zero tracks in the vein of the original game rather than just the 3D-style tracks. But of course, exclusive to Japan, so the only way to really play it here was to import, so I don't think many people played this one. And I don't know how comprehensible the story is in to Western audiences who don't know Japanese. Might not be too much to it. There really isn't a whole heck of a lot. It's just,
I mean, really, if it were localized, would it be that comprehensible anyway?
True. So. Well, it's just really, F-Zero is all about just race and win, so I don't know how much you need to know the story to get a feel for what F-Zero Climax is all about, but also some pretty decent music in this game too. So, and that's it. That's the last game in the series. We have not gotten one since the Game Boy Advance was actually a thing, and I don't know what Nintendo's thinking. I don't think they are. What do you think, Ian? What do you think? Why do you think? Do you think it's really a case of, oh, what Miyamoto says? about F-Zero. He's like, well, what can we bring to the table that's new compared to what we've already done in previous stories of the game or previous versions
There's
of the game?
That, and I can appreciate that mindset, but there was another interview, and
I don't think so.
Now I can't remember what the context of it, but that the team or those involved were surprised that there was demand for F-Zero to come back, because apparently GX did not do exceptionally well. Nor did the subsequent games, so they thought, "Oh, we're done with it."
Yeah, and that might be why
still want it. Why?
That might
it didn't do well, and it's
that might be why Climax didn't come out here. Actually, maybe GP Legend was not quite didn't quite have the sales success that they were hoping. But I don't. But I don't know that for sure.
Anime that might not have that I don't think did very well. I don't have any context for it, but I don't really. It's not one of those that you hear folks talk about. So.
No, the only clip I see is Captain Falcon punching whatever he punches, and he's screaming, "Falcon punch!" Yeah,
I don't know. It's trying to get a read or get a feel of what Nintendo is doing with their IPs. It is extremely difficult.
Yes, it can be.
I mean, I kind of fear that Star Fox finally has the final nail in its coffin, given how poorly Zero was received.
Yeah,
because they can't seem to get the concept of what made the 64 game so stellar, but then again it was so successful as an aspect to Starlink that it got a beefy DLC, which as far as I know is exclusive to the Switch version. So I mean, Kid Icarus got a sequel after what, 20 years?
Yeah,
but we may not see another one for heaven knows how long, because Sakurai aimed to make the quintessential Kid Icarus game and not touch it again for a bit. So he also thought he was done with Smash Brothers, but they kept telling him to make more. I don't know. There's really no way to
speculate. I think Kid Icarus is something. Kid Icarus is an interesting thing because there was somebody inside the company to sort of spearhead a revival. And it doesn't seem like there's anybody, at least nobody major inside Nintendo, who seems to want to spearhead a revival of F-Zero. And so I think that's kind of why it's lying dormant. It seems like Metroid was kind of the same way. There was nobody who wanted to spearhead a revival of Metroid, partially because it appeals more to Western audiences, and I don't think... It seems like Nintendo doesn't really want to make something that only appeals to Western audiences. They want that universal appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing what happened was, do you know the story of Metroid Prime? Because I don't actually offhand, but I'm wondering if it was pitched by Retro Studios and Nintendo gave them the okay, or if it was the other way around.
I don't know.
But I'm just thinking, like, because otherwise they might not have ever made another Metroid game if it weren't for Prime. Because they completely just sat on that series for the entirety of the N64 era and never did anything with it. The only appearance of Samus anywhere during the N64 era was in Smash Brothers. So,
and it's funny thinking back on when Prime was announced and everyone's rolling their eyes going, oh, they're just trying to capitalize on Halo. You can't make Metroid first person. You're not going to have the same atmosphere. You can't do the puzzles or platforming. This is going to be garbage. They clearly don't care about Metroid. Wah, 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 wah. And now everyone just thinks about standing there and looking up into the rain going, oh.
Thinking of how great Metroid Prime is. It is a fantastic series.
I mean, it's a solid trilogy overall. The first one, I think everyone agrees, is pretty much the best, but there's not a bad Prime game.
Right. But F-Zero, I feel like it's a similar thing. There's just nobody out there who really wants to either nobody wants to spearhead it, or just the higher-ups at Nintendo aren't interested in anybody spearheading it. Like, I don't know if they just don't have enough, just whoever wants to spearhead it just doesn't have enough pull, or if there just isn't anybody there who wants to do another one, which is a shame, because I really think there's a lot of stuff there to work with for the F-Zero series. There's a lot you can build upon, whether it's another kind of story-driven game or if it's just something that it's just like a really gorgeous HD visual feast for the eyes and ears and everything that would be amazing to be playing today. I don't know, but there's also other games that are similar to F-Zero out there, like the Fast RMX. Well, actually, it's Fast Racing is what it's called for. It was actually, I think, originally on the Wii, and then they came out with one for Wii U and for the Switch. And that series, I think, does a pretty decent job of at least having that sort of roller coaster speed style gameplay. But there's just something about F-Zero where it has that Nintendo appeal to it, where there's just these wacky characters and just this fun music and this this awesome presentation that I really don't think you get. It's that Nintendo polish that you just don't get from other games, even games that are similar to it, like Wipeout or the Fast Racing series and stuff like that. So I think that might be about it. F-Zero Talk?
All I think we can say on it, it was there. It was great. Perhaps it will come again for one more lap.
I really hope so. I really do. And I kind of hope Sega's involved, because I feel like Sega getting involved with F-Zero GX is another thing that really made the series shine. So it has that, it definitely does have that Sega influence. And F-Zero, as far as I know, from what I've read, F-Zero was actually a big influence on certain Sega racing games throughout the 90s. So I guess they were looking at like F-Zero when they were talking about, or when they were designing like even games like Daytona and stuff. So there's this sort of, it's a very symbiotic relationship that the game industry and game developers and stuff have with each other. And I think F-Zero could return from that, or could return with some more influences from modern games too. So I'm looking forward to it, and I'm hoping there's another F-Zero in the pipe eventually soon. All right, with that out of the way, we're ready to jump into the Q&A.
We certainly are. If you want to have your question answered on the show, email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, tweet to us at bumblecast, comment in the YouTube comments. If you're a patron, post anywhere on the Patreon page, and we will get to it. If you want your question answered sooner rather than later, become a $5 patron or give us $5 through Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/bumblecast. Make sure to note that it is for the show. And you get bumped up into the priority Q&A. And we have plenty of priority Q&A, don't we, Kyle?
Yeah, we do. We have a whole slew of questions, I guess. Is slew the correct word? A nice handful, I suppose.
A generous selection.
Sure, we'll go with that. You're the wordsmith of this collaboration, so I defer to you. I just seem to wander aimlessly through sentences until I finally reach a point where I just kind of stop. So, first up, Connell T. Yo, you don't have to think too much about this one, but the design of those infected by the metallic menace that is the metal virus look a tad like the prelates from the old comic run. Am I saying prelates right? I feel like we've done this before.
I've heard it's prelates, but
prelates. Prelates might make sense. At least I'm not calling prelates. That could be weird. I almost did, but anyway. Was this a reference of ideas of old, or was it a total coincidence that the heroes were dealing with shiny zombie dudes?
It's been so long since we did that storyline. But I think it is a coincidence. From what I remember, the prelates were more of a nod to Tron. The idea was supposed to be the character's base signature color being this Tron-like neon accent light. And then the base metallic color was just supposed to accentuate the color choice. Whereas Metal Virus is definitely based off of the Sonic Heroes multiplayer skins, where it's supposed to take the character base color or kind of signature color and give it to them just wholesale shiny. So very different visual deliveries. There's obviously some crossover visually, but I don't think it was intentional to do metal dudes twice over.
See, and I thought this whole thing was just inspired by Terminator movies.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some of Sonic Heroes was inspired by Terminator.
I'd say Terminator is so ubiquitous in pop culture now that there's almost even things that aren't directly inspired by it are still in a way, inspired by it. It's that sort of thing where it's just almost universal. Next one comes from Scruffy Matt. Today, I'm curious about your feelings towards side quests. Do you prefer to prioritize them over the main game objective or put them off until later, possibly even ignoring them entirely? Also, what are some of your favorite and least favorite side quests in games? I often get annoyed by some of the Riddler questions in the Arkham games, but it's oh so satisfying when I finally outwit him and lock him up.
Personally, I have to do all the side quests first. I have to complete them all. I can't move forward, Kyle. What if they, you know, run out? What if they don't trigger right? What if I need that item? What if I will gain a little bit of experience that will make the main game easier? They put them there for a reason. I must check off everything on the list. Everything must be neat and tidy.
I don't know how I feel about side quests, to be honest. Some games, it depends on how much I like the game. Sometimes if I don't really care about the game, or if I'm not really into it, I'll just leave them. But if I really like playing the game, and if it's fun, then I'll do them. So, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, where I got really sucked into side quests. I guess the other problem is I don't play many RPGs or story-driven games that have side quests like that so much. I don't know. I'm trying to think, because like Bloodstained, I'm playing Bloodstained right now, mm-hmm. and there's a certain sort of side quests where you have to defeat certain numbers of certain types of enemies, and by doing so, you unlock items. I'm not really feeling the need to do those other than just picking them up organically as I go along. Like, I'll occasionally go back to the contact that I have to talk to get those from, and then just kind of play through the game normally, and as I go through the game, I kind of unlock them. But I'm not really feeling like I need to go grinding for enemies and hunting down specific enemies as I do it. So I don't know if that's just me. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who would go and look at that list of side quests to do. To kill certain enemies and be like, oh God, now I have to go find these enemies and sort of go explore the castle for that specific enemy, then come back to the contact, turn the quest in, go on to the next one, turn the quest in, go on to the next one, and just be like, get real sucked into it. But I don't know. I just felt like, oh, I just can kind of do these organically as I go through the game.
Are designed well, that should be how it goes. It shouldn't be a grind fest. It should be part of your experience. And if you have to hunt down a few, then you're doing like one or two, and that's kind of fun because you're off on a quest to do the thing. If it's the kind of grind fest where it's like, okay, now you have to go out and do 25 of these things that you haven't seen for three levels, those aren't fun. Those I can kind of ignore.
I've actually gotten most of them just by mostly organically playing through the game, which has been great. I have quite enjoyed that, so it's not too bad. But there's also another contact in Bloodstained that involves, it's an old lady who's trying to remember some of her favorite foods, and she can't remember them. But you see before you talk to her, you see like a thought bubble over her head, which shows what the food is. So you just kind of have to figure out what that food is and then go and craft it with your alchemist dude. You have to get him to craft it and then give it to her, or you have to go find the food organically throughout the game. And I got to be honest, I have not bothered with any of that at all. I just don't care because that seems like it's just so much more work than going out there and just killing dudes. So I'm not too worried about that. That's not integrated. I don't think that one's integrated very well. But the ones where you just go around the castle, and if you end up happen to kill a couple enemies as you go through that rack up toward your side quests, then I'm okay with that. That's cool with me. But
now,
otherwise, I'm not so sure.
I'm not fond of subquests that have kind of a gotcha to them. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking specifically of Knights of the Old Republic, where you can get repair kits for HK-47, your killbot, who is directly tied to your character's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sink a lot of time and money into trying to restore his memory to figure out why he's loyal to you and what the connection is. but you can never fully achieve it because that reveal is part of the main campaign. So at most, you're going to get these little non-committal answers that don't do anything to really reveal anything when you could have been using those resources towards other things with the character. And I feel like wasting your resources when you could have built it better, but there's no way to know going in blind, is annoying.
Yeah.
It is off-putting. Or, I like the type of subquest where you can put your, you can put the effort in, but if you really don't want to do it the right way, you can kind of brute force it.
Yeah.
We're going through Fire Emblem Three Houses right now, and one of the regular things you do is run around the campus and find lost items, and it gives you hints on which student dropped it. And the idea is you get to know the individual students and their quirks and their likes and their dislikes. So you pick up a thing and it's like, oh, this is for someone who would really like art. Okay, I know this student talks about painting a lot. I'll take it to them. But when you've got 20 of them in your inventory and there's like 30 freaking students and you're only 2 months into the game time and you don't know who half these kids are because they're not part of your dorm room and you just want to get the thing done. I started just going, is this yours? 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 Oh, you liked it. Okay, moving on. Which kind of defeats the immersion, but at the same time, I got stuff to do.
Right. Yeah. I feel sometimes games don't necessarily respect your time. And then, and as an adult, I feel like time is more and more precious. As a kid, you feel like you got all the time in the world. But as an adult, you just don't want to waste time. So I feel you there. Would you say, like,
and no, I can't ignore it. I have to complete it. It has to be done, Kyle.
Yeah. Would you say that alternate exits in games, like, say, Super Mario World or Mario 3, alternate exits in levels, actually, I think mainly it's Mario World that would have that, alternate exits in levels would be sort of side quests that have alternate paths, or is that not really related? I guess, similar, but not exactly the same.
I feel like side quests are objectives that you must complete that will give you bonus material. Alternate paths are just extra content.
I feel like side quests you just don't necessarily have to bother with. You can usually safely ignore them, but they might give you certain things that make the game either easier or at least make certain parts of it more livable or, I don't know, just make you feel good about yourself. So I guess alternate paths in Mario World don't really do that so much unless you get to like Star Road and then you can just skip half the game or more than half the game now that I think about it. So
I don't know. I don't know where I would draw the line.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I don't know. I did 100% Mario World, as I think we mentioned in a pretty recent episode though. So I definitely felt the drive and the need to play that game in full. But there are some games where I'm like, I don't need to do that. I don't need to bother. All right, next question, and our final of the priority Q&A questions comes from Andrew D. There's now an alternate zone. Whether before the reboot or after, this is actually a question from a little while ago, so this does not mention IDW, but it's not really necessary, where everyone is gender swapped. You can incorporate characters and elements from either before or after the reboot into this reality. They can coexist, as this is an alternate reality. For example, gender swap Julie Sue and gender swap Relic can hang out together on Angel Island with gender swap Knuckles. Any ideas of what you would introduce? What would the characters be like? What names might they have? And would there be any personality changes amongst the cast? Would gender swapped Amy be seen as even more of a creep stalking gender swap Sonic? Have fun!
Yeah. See, this could potentially open up a much larger can of worms.
It's an interesting thought exercise, but yes.
Like, how much does one's gender identity affect their individual personality? And that's a much, much bigger question than I think Andrew's looking to get answered. By and large, I don't see the characters changing much at all, if any, because the characters,
I don't necessarily have to, no.
Like most of the cast is defined by their characters, not their gender. Like, there's nothing about Sonic that has to be masculine. If he were a girl character, it's the still upbeat, sporty, adventurous, cocky attitude. That's Sonic.
Right.
You don't have to put a gender label on it. Now, Amy, if we did the swaparoo and you had guy Amy chasing after girl Sonic, younger guy Amy after older girl Sonic, I don't know. You really would have to approach it from a different angle, I think, just because of how we perceive it within our culture. And
yep.
I don't know. I'd have to sit down and really think about that one, because it really would be interesting to see how that version of Amy would be perceived. How could you even approach that kind of lovesick adoration without going super creepy with it? Now,
would that kind of character even be like socially acceptable? Would that character have even existed if
right? But why is it acceptable? Because Amy is who she is. It would be a little easier with the most recent incarnations of the characters, because Amy's adoration is more understated.
She's a bit more downplayed these days, yeah.
Sega finally got the memo, and it's like, okay, the Sonic Heroes level, I'm going to beat you up so you can marry me, is out the window. It's now much, much more subdued. So that would be easier to translate. But as for names, I don't know. Most of the characters are just like nouns anyway. I don't feel like they need to be
Their names
gendered one way or the
most
other.
Most of their names aren't really gender specific. Amy, once again, being an exception.
Sure.
And a couple of the Freedom Fighters.
I mean, I Miles guess. Would have to be tweaked, sure.
Sally could just become Sal, I guess. That would work, maybe.
Might be a little just strange. Swap names with her brother. Elias becomes Sally. Sally's Elias.
Maybe, yeah. I suppose.
Just, I mean, it's already a bad anagram of each other. No, that's what it is. Elias and Sally just mixed up.
I know. I'm just laughing at it because I'm like, I guess you're right. I've just never really like processed it that way.
I don't know. I think the most interesting thing about doing a swaparoo like that would be the character designs.
Yeah.
Just because there are such hard and fast rules over what male and female characters in the Sonic universe have to look like. It would be just neat to see what you could do with that. But
I've seen
character-wise, I'm not seeing much of a change.
I've seen some good Rule 63 Sonic character designs, and I've seen some really, really bad ones. So it would be interesting to see what would be quote-unquote official, considered official, as far as gender swap designs would go. So it's an interesting thought experiment. All right, let's go ahead and get into the standard Q&A and maybe try and speed through this a little bit. This one comes from Liam B. I feel conflicted when reviewing the idea of Antoine being killed. On one hand, my inner child, who is inevitably connected to the series, as it is a cartoon, wants everything to turn out great for these characters, and it's not unrealistic to say the injury did serve the desired purpose, and sometimes people in dire situations do get better. On the other hand, there's also a reality to the idea that sometimes people we know and love are ripped from their lives and our own, and this reality has to be accepted. I know you made the choice to have him live, but with time having passed, which of these two equally viable options do you feel would have worked better?
Well, as it played out, I'm kind of glad that we did back off, because if we had killed him off and then, you know, we had the reboot happen, I think that would have left an even more sour taste in everyone's mouth, because, but either way, had the story continued as I intended, and as I will detail in Lost Hedgehog Tales, yes, it's still happening. Yes, there's still stuff in the way. Yes, I know some of what it is. No, I can't talk about it. How Antoine was, his situation was resolved would have been largely the same. Like, I already had his personal arc from Kaboom to back on his feet plotted out in my head, and it I had already made accommodations for that change. So I knew where I was going with it. It's just, we never got a chance to go there. So either way, as Liam said, the results still worked. Antoine was still grievously injured. It still affected the team. They still reacted to it. The only change would be some of the details going on to the end of his personal arc. So I don't know. It's fine as it is. I don't really feel strongly one way or the other. You know, we should have killed him more. No, it was a good idea. It worked.
At least didn't spend an entire arc wondering whether he was alive or dead.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of this type of book, is you can make all these grand plans, but, you know, it's not my creation. I don't have full control over it. And when something happens, like it did, you just kind of eventually learn how to let it go. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting there. Mm. I've pried one hand off.
Sometimes you just got to roll with the punches, I suppose, as best as you can. It sucks, though. It really does. Next question comes from Clove Pronghorn. Wow, this is interesting. Got a question from Clove herself. There were a few redesigns of old game/cartoon characters in Archie. If those characters were to come back, would their redesigns come with them?
That is a good question. I don't know. It would kind of depend on the nature of which we got access to those characters again. Right now, they're off the table, like non-accessible. But like in the hypothetical scenario where Sega says, okay, you can use the Freedom Fighters again, I don't know if we'd be able to use the, you know, Volume 2 designs, or if we would have to start from scratch again because they wouldn't want a direct connection to the old book or what. I really don't know. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I'm still banging on the door saying, can we bring them back now, please? But, you know, once we get past that hurdle, then we'll worry about designs.
What, you mean you actually want to bring them back in? There are some people out there who seem to think you don't. I don't know about that. I don't know. Seems a little,
I would love to give another shot at them. I have like a folder of various ways I would like to bring them back. You know, if you know the editor doesn't like this one, how about this? If Sega doesn't like that, how about this one? I have lots of angles of attack. I've had a lot of time to think about it.
Right.
If they don't, then yeah, that's disappointing. It really is. They're a fun group, and you know, I know a lot of people would be disappointed about it because they are kind of indicative of North American Sonic Comics. But, you know, it, like I just said, I don't have control over it, and I've got to learn where to just say, okay, let go.
Right.
I mean, the absolute worst that can happen is I can keep asking and it never changes. But if I keep asking, there might be a yes. So I don't know. We'll see. Right now, we got to get through the Metal Virus saga. That's plenty on the plate. And we'll be talking about on the Sonic live stream. Hey!
Nice. Crossover plug there. Got it. Cool. All right, next question comes from Ray G. I found your script bits on the Bumble King forums. I'm an aspiring comic book penciler. Can I use those scripts to draw from and use the penciled pages I make as a portfolio to publishers as long as I give credit for where and who wrote the script? It's one of my dreams to become a comic book penciler for the Sonic comics. If I'm not allowed to use the script bits, I understand, and thank you for your time.
Mary, good luck to you, and absolutely, use them to your heart's content. I appreciate the nod back to where they came from, but it's not really necessary because they're, you know, defunct scripts at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Yeah, I would say it's also a private portfolio, so it's not really a, like, I don't know. I'm just thinking, I don't know. What am I thinking, Ian? Help me.
I don't know. I rarely understand what goes on in that twisted little cave that is your mind.
Oh, yeah, it's a cave, all right. There ain't much mind in there. I'm just thinking, like, in terms of, just because if it's a private portfolio, if you're just sending it as a portfolio to people in the industry, I guess you don't necessarily have to worry so much about credit. If you're putting them out there publicly on the internet, then yes, but
I mean, it's at least a good habit to get into.
It is. Yes.
It's an appreciated gesture. And I put the script bits out there specifically for folks to, you know, learn off of, to use them as examples, to pull from, to work with, and yada, yada, yada. So I'm glad you found them. I hope they serve you well. Good luck with your portfolio, and hopefully you will get on the book.
And our final Q&A on this episode of the Bumblecast. It's a little bit of a heavy one.
It is. This person I've already replied to directly. We're going to keep them anonymous because I don't know just how personal this question was to them. But at the same time, I kind of feel like there are others that would want to ask this question, but can't bring themselves to do it for whatever reason.
Right.
So we're going to put it out there anonymously. Thank you to the person who submitted it. And hopefully, you know, the answer I gave them and will be giving now is of some help.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I hope so. All right. Let's go ahead and get into it. It says, "Hi there, Ian. I love your stories, especially the Sonic comics. I hope you can continue with the great work, and I look forward to more surprises and stories you have in store for the future. But I'm looking for some help. Ever since last year, I've struggled with depression and anxiety. I see a lot of people tweeting depressing politics and all kinds of negativity, and it doesn't seem to stop. I can't enjoy most things anymore, and in January, I broke down. I still haven't found a therapist for me yet. So, Ian, can you help me? I could use some emotional support and help from you. I'm sorry that I'm venting to you, but I would like some help from an inspiration. I hope you can get back to me, and I hope you accept receiving vent messages."
So, number one, never apologize for reaching out for help. Even if it's to, you know, some random person you've never met, but you know of their name, taking that first step is a big deal. So
yeah,
kudos to you for reaching out. I'm sorry if I'm not smart enough or savvy enough to give you good advice or even helpful advice, but I will do my best. Number two, I know finding a therapist and a good therapist is really tough. They are in high demand, especially now that the public consciousness is more aware of mental health and social health. They're seeking it out more, and it is hard to come by, but don't give up because you need to help yourself. Like if you were sick with a head cold or something, you wouldn't just go, "Oh, I can't see the doctor because I can't find one." No, you have to take care of yourself. Mental and emotional health is the same as physical health. It is all part of you. And if something is not right, if something is ill, it needs to be treated. So more power to you in searching for that therapist, and don't give up, which is the biggest thing. Really, when I see a lot of these folks who are having anxiety and
depression,
just shutting down. I know a lot of what you're talking about. There have been days where I just don't want to do. Nothing is appealing. Nothing feels like an adequate distraction. You just want to shut down and just say nope and be done with everything. And you know, if you have a day like that where you do just kind of curl up in a ball, then okay, that was one day where you fell off the horse. But that can't be all your days. If you stumbled that one day, if you had that shortfall, okay, that was a low point. Pick yourself up, build yourself back up, because you have to. And I know you can. And I'm not just speaking just to the person. I'm speaking to anyone who's listening to this who, you know, this might affect. I'm rooting for you. I don't know who you are. I don't know where you are. I don't know what's going on with you, but just by the very virtue of your listening to this, know that I'm in your corner. I don't know what I can do for you. I don't know if those words help, but at the very least, I'm here and I want you to get better. And I hope you get better. The whole thing about negativity online. Yeah, it's absolutely overwhelming. So get offline.
Oh yeah. You know, absolutely. Yes.
I mean, you want to be involved. You want to have your finger on the pulse of potential dangers, what you need to know is going on in the world and in your community, but you have to just break away from it. Never before, really, in our culture have we had this much access, real time, to everything that's going on around us, and everything is a knee-jerk reaction. And we're not ready for this. We have not developed individually or socially a way to properly tackle this. We're just now beginning to learn. So walk away from it. You know, turn off Twitter for a day, for a week. You know, get away from the message boards and do something else. Find something else constructive. You know, if you like to cook, cook. If you don't like to cook, learn something to cook, even if it's simple. You don't have to do like a Gordon Ramsay 5-star meal. Just learn something that's kind of basic and tastes good so that you can say, hey, I did this. You know, if you're an artistic type, write a poem, write a story, draw a picture, do something. It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to be something that you show off to other people. You can look at it the next day and go, ha ha, this has never seen the light of day. And that's fine, because you still made something. And for that moment, you were involved in making something. It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to have value. All you're doing is ignoring the bad stuff and focusing on doing something constructive for yourself. Go out with friends if you can. Just go out into a social environment if that's something you can do. You know, people watch if you're in an urban area. You know, just that's something that we do as a species, and it's weird, but what can I say?
It happens, yeah.
I mean, there's tons of media out there, whether you go through YouTube or Netflix, books, comics, video games. Even if you just need to like detach from reality for an hour or two, something to give your mind and your soul a little bit of a break. It's not being lazy. It's giving yourself that time to just decompress. That is something I am very, very bad at, to be perfectly honest.
I am as well. Yes.
I mean, most of the time when I go to sleep, I'm thinking about work, and when I wake up, I'm still thinking about work, but that's partly because I really enjoy work, and that's what I do to escape from everything, but that's my baggage. Point is, do not give up. Always strive for something better, because even if it doesn't happen today, even if it doesn't happen tomorrow, there will be a break. And when you get through to the other side and you look back at what you've come from, you can go, wow, that was crap. And here I am. I'm awesome. So I think I'm rambling at this point. Just take care of yourselves. Reach out to someone if you need to, if you can. And I don't know. We're all on this together. We'll figure it out.
I have, as I've mentioned several times on the show, I'd say that stepping back from social media is a good thing. I've done it before where I don't really check in with, you know, what's going on every day on Facebook. Unfortunately, I'm kind of falling a little bit into the Twitter pit lately, but I'm noticing it, so I'm doing my best to sort of keep myself grounded without falling into the pit. Sort of, I guess, not dangling on the edge, but you know what I mean. Sort of just propping myself up and making sure I don't fall into that. But right. I'm trying to be active enough to where I'm at least present. Because I do a lot of things online. Both you and I both have things that we do online, Ian, because we have this show, we do game streaming, I do my other show, and things like that. So I want to at least try and have some sort of presence and connectability online. But I understand just that getting overwhelmed just by what's going on and just seeing even what other people are doing, whether it's positive things they're doing or negative things, because sometimes even the positive things that other people are doing can have a negative impact on you, because you look at what they're doing and maybe you're just sort of seeing their life and at least the life they're presenting on social media, which may or may not even be representative of their actual life, but you may feel like you're not living that life, and so you're feeling sort of maybe having some level of anxiety or depression about that. Like, oh, there's other people out there who are living such a much better life than I am. When you really have there's no real good way to actually tell whether someone's living a better life than you or not, just based on what they post on social media. So falling into that pit can be tough. And I have definitely dealt with that before. Depression and anxiety is a large factor in my life. It's something that I've struggled with, something that I still deal with. I feel a lot better these days just because I've managed to change my circumstances of my life in ways that have made it better. So, but it's a hard road to get there. And it's sometimes it feels like no matter how low you go, it feels like you're still not quite at rock bottom yet. And once you feel like you get to rock bottom, it can be really a struggle to claw your way back out. So, but we're with you and you can do it. We believe in you. It's just, I understand just how hard it can be and how much it feels like maybe you're on your own, whether you have someone in your life there or not. Even if you do, it sometimes just feels like you're kind of on your own and you don't want to burden. That's a thing that I've felt, is I don't want to burden other people with my problems. And I still feel that way. And it's something that I've struggled with, sort of that whole reaching out for help thing. There's so many people online who say, oh, if you're feeling bad, reach out for help, call certain helplines or talk to a therapist or certain things like that. And those are certainly helpful for the vast majority of people. But I know the feeling of you don't want to bother people with your problems. You think that other people have their own problems to deal with, or they just don't care about you. But in reality, if there are people you talk to on a regular basis, if they're your friends, they do care about you. And they hope for the best for you. So I feel like maybe just reach out to them a little bit on the side. You don't have to say anything. And if they do turn you away, then maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's good that you realize that these people maybe aren't actually in your corner and you can find someone who is in your corner. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling at this point too, Ian, but that's just sort of my thoughts on it, because I've dealt with like feeling like I don't want to bother other people with my problems. Like it's not my place to put this on the table and make it another person's burden as well. This is my burden. This is what I deal with. And I don't want to bring other people into it when it's mine. But sometimes you can't carry the burden on your own. And so maybe just, I don't know, seek some support if you can. And just try to maybe unplug and do your best to not fixate on what's going on in the world so much. It's tough. Believe me, I have dealt with it for a very long time, but I don't know. Yeah, that's about it. I think that's all I have. So I think we're good. Are we ready to, go ahead.
I feel bad for this, but I found the perfect segue. Speaking of support, let's give a big thank you to all the patrons who support this show.
That's a good segue right there. That's
oh, I feel dirty.
That's a good one. I don't care who you are. That's funny. I don't know.
Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex B., Andrew D., Blue Title Gamer, Koopaling Crew 128, Frederick, Scruffy Matt, Saturn Flicky, Chris A, John B, Jennifer R, Revan the Light, Lisa M, PC the Unicorn, Do As Diz Din, Dave M, Daniel B, Mike B, Samuel P, Sam Cybercat, Digama F, Wow, Brody M, Neil H, Justin G, Dan MS, Silly String, Takaro, Lee HK, Chevelle, Don B, Sin Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M, James K, Adam BT, Overthing Films, and Ron.
Ron. Good old Ron. Bringing up the tail. Always good to hear Ron. And good to hear everybody else's name, too. You guys are all awesome.
Kyle, where can they find you once the show is over?
You can find me over on Twitter at KyleJCRB. You can also find me over at KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast in MP3 downloadable format for your podcast player of choice. And you can also listen to my other show, Nitro Game Injection, at KNGI.org, which also streams live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can listen to the archived versions on that site and put it in your podcast player and listen to it and have all sorts of awesome good stuff going on. So where can people find you, Ian?
Head over to Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or my website, bumbleking.com. That has a release calendar for all the stuff that I'm working on, as well as my con appearances. Reminder, Fan Expo is only like 3 weeks away. Oh, God. So I will be there. And it's going to be my last show of the year unless something changes here last minute.
Alrighty. Don't forget, you can also ask your questions and just give general shout-outs over on Twitter at Bumblecast. Send us email, Q&A, whatever, at bumblecast@yahoo.com, and you can listen to the Bumblecast via your podcast player of choice using Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify.
You can adorn yourself with various forms of merchandise, with various forms of Bumblecast logoisms over at the Bumble store, that shop.spreadsheet.
Spreadshirt.
Yes, shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble Store.
And don't forget, Bumblecast Gaming Live streams on Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as other possible times throughout the week, like I did one just this past Thursday for more Bloodstained. So keep an eye out on Twitter for announcements regarding that, and also on YouTube, where I'll usually put up like a pre-announcement thing on there that you can click on to remind yourself like a couple hours before the stream. So, yeah, check it out.
That's going to wrap us up for this episode of the Bumblecast. We are cresting the hill towards Bumblecast number 100. Egad. We'll see you then.
Scary. I'm scared. Ian, I'm scared.
Sin, I'm trying to lay off the junk food so I don't look quite as fat when I go onto the stream later in the week. It's kind of a futile effort at this point. I look kind of like the death egg just left out in the sun, but do what I can.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's okay. People will still love you, Ian. It's fine. You're just kind of that lovable guy. They can go stuff themselves. But still trying to keep this family friendly, even though we're post-show. Hey.
Classy. Always take the high road.
Yeah, that.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
Also, I don't know if I should admit this or not. But as I was talking for the last question there, I almost said the words "my struggle," and I'm like, "Ooh, that has a really bad connotation these days," and I really should not say that word those two words together.
I don't
really
think
shouldn't do that. Really shouldn't
that
do that.
Context.
That's why I said burden. That's why I said burden instead of struggle. Yeah, so yes, yeah. I found another wiser, word. I found another word that's a little bit better. I was like, ooh, maybe I shouldn't say that.
Hard jerk of the wheel to the left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, ooh, can I find another word before I get to this word? Can I find another one? Good, I found one. Yeah, that's sort of my brain. That's what my brain was doing. I'm like, need to find another one. Need to find another one. Yeah, there we go. Found it. Whew. That was close. Almost said something I might have regretted. Wait, I do that on every show. Never mind. You guys can probably cut out all sorts of stuff I've said that would be out of context. That would be horribly, horribly, horribly bad.